Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Modern.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's going on, everybody?
Today we have the wonderful Jimmy Wong in the house, kind of, on Skype.
Whoa, what's going on over Skype, guys? That was cool. I want to do that, Ben. I want to do that every time now. That was sick.
We both got sweet now, turntables here.
Yeah, it's crazy how today's DJ day. So Jimmy's here. So that, you know what that means, guys on the internet. We are doing a top 10 countdown. Today we are doing white cards.
Hooray.
For those coming back, we've done red artifacts and blue cards so far.
So you mean really, really good cards, really awesome cards, and then two colors that just have sideboard cards and like two good cards.
Well, lightning bolt is a thing.
Shots fired.
Whoa.
Shots.
Color.
Against my favorite color too. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Actually, the red episode was pretty good, I think.
Yeah. There's some really good red cards.
Yeah,
and some pretty good.
Pretty sweet.
In fact, I would say like blue has worse cards than red cards in this format.
Yeah, but blue's just a better color.
Fine.
That's true. You know, I don't think anyone could disagree with that.
Nope. No,
that's
they
for
can't.
Sure.
Or they'd be wrong to do
yeah.
so.
Yeah. I still think the best deck in Modern is Splinter Twin. So, yeah. I mean, it's the combination of the two colors we're talking about, so.
Yeah, it's like we're a sweet team in our opinions just now.
Yeah, so before we get into that, I do want to remind everyone that we will respond to you if you tweet at us while you're listening to us. So you should tweet at us right now. Just do it. Just like go on Twitter.
We are
at the MMCast, so tweet now. Go. And then come back.
Go.
Also, rate us on iTunes. Check out our YouTube channel. Subscribe.
That's right. You guys are doing videos now. You guys have it's awesome. So all of your stuff is now slowly getting put up video by video, which is great.
Yes. Yeah. Some of it's really dated because it's like from 3 months ago, but like because there's a backlog, we're throwing it up there. So just go check that out.
And these top 10 lists are forever.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. They never change, especially when cards get banned.
They never change until things like Treasure Cruise get printed and then banned before we do blue.
I think we did do top 10 green cards. Did we do? No, not yet. No. Yeah. Oh, we did artifacts. And that's how Birthing Pod snuck to the top.
Yeah.
And that's no longer a card that's legal.
Looks
so.
Like Spell Sky should have been number one all along.
Oh, boy. Nice.
So, moving on. there was a thing. Oh, okay. Before we get into the actual top 10 list, I do want to bring up that I shot called that the Bounce Lands were going to be in Modern Masters 2015.
Nice.
Spoilers are going on. So
you
guys should check it out.
A lot of this set, Alex. I am very impressed by your shot.
Though I was
ability.
Just blatantly wrong about Infect.
Right.
Well, you know, they said that they were trying to put Infect in this set, and then they just found it didn't fit with the limited format, so they just took it out.
Yep.
So
Fair
you
enough.
Were almost right.
Right. And there are some Wither cards. That's like the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah. All right. And also, I guess we will be at the GP Vegas. So you guys should come say hi there too.
We'll be super excited. We'll be wearing like these big obnoxious yellow 10-gallon hats that say MM on them.
We probably won't be doing that.
I already ordered mine.
Ben will probably be in a suit though. So look for the guy in a suit.
And a 10-gallon hat. I thought this was the meeting we had, guys. Did I dream that? Maybe I dreamed it.
I think you dreamt it. I don't think I'm ever wearing a 10-gallon hat. All right. So top 10 list. So how we're going to do this? We're going to count down top 10, 10 to 1. Me and Ben each have our own picks for a top 10, and Jimmy has what the command cast did, because he has his own commander podcast, and they're going to list what their 10 what cards were as well. So you get all of the goodness of what white cards are the best.
Do you want to start with our honorable mentions or save until the end?
I want to do honorable mentions before we do the first one, but after we do the second best.
Okay.
So like right before we do first best, we like do like a cliffhanger moment and do honorable mentions.
Yeah.
That's good.
It's like on TV shows when they're doing top 10s. They're like, why don't I just get to the number one? And they're like, but first, let's look back at what almost made the list.
Yep, exactly.
Alex
we're doing
like,
that.
Alex and is like that McMahon guy that runs the wrestling empire.
Right.
That's what this podcast feels like now.
In fact, Jimmy, if you can do that voice right before.
You got
mentions.
It. I'll be there.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, number 10.
Let's start with Jimmy. Let's start with the commander.
The commander ones? All right, yeah, let's do that.
So it was a mix between Josh chose Blind Obedience for number 10.
That's a good card.
Which I think might make it into the Modern. Who knows?
It could.
Yeah, it has Extort on it, but also, importantly, artifacts and creatures your opponents control enter the battlefield tapped.
Yeah.
So this straight up would destroy a Kiki Jiki.
Well, it's weird because they can do it in response to the end step happening, so they'll come into play tapped on their turn, but they don't have to sack it, and then they can just it delays them for a turn. they can't win on their turn. They have to wait till after your turn to kind of pull it off.
Right.
So it does give you a chance to, like, respond, and if that's what you're all about, it definitely helps there.
Ah, okay. Yeah, and my number 10 was Mentor of the Meek.
I love that card.
Love that card.
Yeah, it's great for EDH, specifically because you usually have to build around this, and white is just the color to have creatures with powers 2 or less. So
well,
that's nice.
It's also, like, the best, and I think Wizards, I don't know which, I think it may have been on Drive to Work, Mark Rosso talked about this. It's the best white card card advantage engine ever printed. And normally they don't like white having card advantage, but because this is attached to creatures, it kind of like got through and there was like some regrets about it. But I think it's an awesome card.
It's a it's definitely a really, really interesting card. I think one of the things brewing with Mentor of the Meek, it's the problem is that it costs 3, and we've always talked about in modern things that cost 3 are like very, very difficult to play.
As an engine. Yeah, yeah. For a modern engine, it's not... It's I would say it's like on the border of playable. It's like it's fringe. Definitely playable. Yeah, yeah.
Well, because if you played this in a deck that played like say a bunch of token makers and birds and things like that, where you really wanted to get value out of them late in the game, it's powering this guy out on turn 2 with like a mana creature on 1. So then all your subsequent draws of those things turn into I can draw a card off this guy. Seems pretty sweet, but
yeah, like a 1 or 2 of in a white weenie, I can imagine just being a thing because they need to draw some cards. All right.
Yep.
So the modern top 10. My personal one was Gideon, Planeswalker.
He's not even in
the OG Gideon.
He costs
5, Alex. He costs 5.
Yeah, but he doesn't. He like passes the Splinter Twin test because you can just plus him and you can't die.
Well, you plus him and then they just kill him.
Yeah, but that buys you a turn where then you. I mean, it does the same thing that we were just talking about the other thing. But it also is like does like 10 other things, like attacks them. And, It's not like that's all he does. He just fogs for a turn. It's if he has to, he fogs for the turn, but he also kills their tapped creature. He's a removal spell plus a threat. He's great in control.
Like here would be my feeling. If you were like, okay, here's my deck and I'm playing Gideon, I don't care what modern deck I'm playing, you're like, Gideon's my deck, I'm like, cool story, bro, I'm gonna win on turn 4. Like
that's... Well, but there are threats. Like if you're playing the control decks, like they play that god, the lightning god or whatever, and
blue red one.
Karanos,
Gideon is a sideboard card, but he's also like a great control threat.
Yeah, people love Gideon. I just never could get into him. He's a very, very powerful card. Like I'm not disputing that at all. Just for modern.
It sounds like you're disputing it. He's one of the top 10 white cards in modern.
So this
and the internet agrees. Tweet
he
if
does
you
come down with 6 loyalty and he pluses 2, and he also his ultimate is not an ultimate. So there are a lot of things about him that are, I guess, at first look a little different and a little off. You kind of have to spend some time thinking about
the
card.
Look at it this way. He's decent against Affinity. Or sorry, he's decent against all aggro decks. He's decent against Splinter Twin. And he's decent against most mid-range decks because it can just shoot and kill a Rhino when he comes into play or survive a Rhino attack.
No, he's a powerful card. This is how this podcast is going to work. Alex is going to lay out a card that's totally reasonable. I'm going to dispute it. And then I'm going to say my card. You guys are just going to like follow and laughing. My number 10 modern card is Weathered Wayfarer.
Ah.
far more powerful than Gideon. No, Weathered Wayfarer is very, very good.
It was on my like list of white cards that exist in modern.
It's funny because when we did the 8th edition review, I actually had this as like one of my top 10 cards to talk about.
Okay.
And I think I talked about it at length then, but I'll say it again. Cards that search for generic land are very, very rare. So this being a 1/1 for 1, like it's a 1-mana card that if you navigate the board state correctly, you have access to any land in modern, that's a very powerful effect.
So so I would actually, if I were making my own commander top 10 list, he would probably be pretty high for me. In the commander top 10 list, I think the issue with modern and Weathered Wayfarer is that the lands are actually like the utility lands aren't that good.
Yeah, it's true.
Like the maybe the best you're getting, I guess, is like one of the spell lands, like one of the like Innistrad activated ability lands.
Or you're getting Horizon Canopy and you're just like drawing a card.
Yeah, yeah. Like
you could also be getting stuff like Celestial Colonnade, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely things it can do. I just don't think it's stronger than just playing 4 Celestial Colonnades.
It's way sweeter in Commander because you have multiple opponents that could have more lands than you. The other thing that's sweet about Weathered Wayfarer is, and this would used to show up in Soul Sisters decks, like that was the list that would show up.
It definitely sees play in Modern.
If you build it in like a white weenie deck that has, say, spell lands or like Horizon Canopies and things like that, they will have more lands than you. You'll stall out on like 4 lands.
Yeah,
decks only play like 22.
Well, especially if you're playing stuff like Ghost Quarter where you're actively lowering your land count.
Yeah, exactly. That's why, and that's the other deck that it would show up in, is it would show up in the Hate Bears deck. You can't search unless you pay 2 card and Mind Censor because like it was sweet. You get Ghost Quarter and just go bonkers.
No, this card is not. This isn't as ridiculous as your lead up after Gideon made it. I thought I was going to be like, Loam Lion.
One, like idyllic tutor or something, yeah, like, which was like on my thoughts. I was like, there's no way I can defend this. All right, let's keep moving.
All right, Jimmy. Number nine, Jimmy.
Number nine, coming in for EDH, was for me, Elspeth, Sun's Champion.
That's the six drop one, correct?
Yeah, she is the one that pops out 3/1/1 tokens. I think just in general, this is the best Planeswalker, I think, that can defend herself with her plus. Because a lot of the other Elspeths are just like, pop one guy out. And also her board wipe ability is so relevant in EDH that it is incredibly powerful.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in EDH, she's an all-star because... The main difference is six mana doesn't matter in EDH. Like
you're mana
curve isn't as important in that format.
It is pretty impressive that her plus one is to get three creatures.
It's three creatures. We've seen it in standard. It just takes over the game. You can't deal with it. Yeah.
I think the fact that it's just like a little too slow, but I think it's definitely on the cusp of modern playable.
I like that in standard right now, like there's like a significant shift between Elspeth being your sweetest threat to like a bunch of sweet dragons being your sweetest threats.
Yeah.
Standard, like with the addition of dragons, is so cool. I don't even like standard. I've been paying like attention and listening to the Flores and Shaven podcast and watching coverage just because like Ojutai is a sweet card.
Yeah.
Dromoka is a sweet card.
Yeah.
I'm on board. I like it.
Yeah, and Josh's number nine, which will pop up later on my list, is Sarah Ascendant.
Okay.
It's automatically turned on in EDH if you play it before. I mean, most times in turns one through like five, you know. So it's just one of those cards that is always on. You don't need to like worry about gaining life. It was built before EDH was invented, kind of, you know. So
right.
Like,
or it was definitely designed not with EDH in mind.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
They kind of have fixed the templating with newer cards that use that kind of mechanic to like make it work within EDH. So like,
yeah, exactly.
Blood Baron of Viscopa like
made it
so like there were more hoops to jump through. I mean that Sarah Ascendant.
Yeah.
Sarah Ascendant sees play in modern. The Soul Sisters deck run four of them because.
Yeah.
Once you get to that life threshold, they become increasingly dangerous threats.
Well, so I've always said in modern, like, one of the things that's really interesting to think about is, like, how can you be getting four or more damage across the board on turn two? And, like, what are ways you can do that? And I believe with Martyr, can you do it? Can you
You can turn one.
And Martyr costs one to activate or two to activate?
One to activate.
So you can gain a bunch of life and swing with Ascendant on turn two, right?
I think so. I mean, the better play in that deck is normally involving... the Aether Vial, I think, gets the... Like, it's not turn two, I guess. Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely hard to do it.
Yeah. And Martyr, you play your Saracen on turn one, then you play Martyr and Sacken on turn two. You gain a whole bunch of life because you get three times that much. So actually, it's very easy to do. And then you swing for six on turn two.
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah.
And that's like... So that's like, you look at... I mean, my version of that was playing Jace's Phantasm on turn one and then Glimpse the Unthinkable on your opponent on turn two for a 5/5 flyer, which is much worse. But
yeah, because instead of you keeping yourself alive for longer, your opponent just keeps doing its thing.
Instead of getting a 6/6 lifelink and just having a sweet creature, you're milling 10 cards and not affecting their life total at all, gaining any life, or having a 6/6.
Seems weird. So moving on to the top 10 list, my number 9 is Daybreak Coronet.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which is now seeing a reprint.
Yes. And so now it's easy to get your hands on. It was the most expensive card out of the Boggles deck, not the Noggles deck.
Yeah. It just made no sense. It was just because it was in that set. And my gosh, for an enchantment aura, it was $30. No thanks.
Yeah. I mean, it's white. It gives a creature +3/+3 lifelink, vigilance, and one other thing.
Lifelink, vigilance, +3/+3. I've got it right here. I'll read it. Daybreak Coronet. Is two, it's white for an enchantment aura, enchant creature with another aura attached to it. So the stipulation is a little difficult. Enchanted creature has +3/+3, has first strike, vigilance, and lifelink.
Right. Okay. So first strike.
Ooh, diddly. That's pretty nice.
Yeah. It basically changes one of your hexproof creatures that you already have really good auras on into an indestructible super threat that just.
Yeah.
Like with Totem Armor plus this makes it like you build your own Baneslayer that's almost better and you just lose very quickly.
I've said it once.
Build your own Baneslayer.
I have like a huge soft spot for Future Sight, just like that block in general. I just remember very fondly, and I remember being at the pre-release for the set and opening packs, and there was just it was such a cool design choice to make up such weird cards.
Yeah,
like this card. Like I just remember opening it and just being like, what. That seems so difficult to do. And then now years later in modern, so many of the cards from Future Sight are like really, really,
because like
cards.
A lot of them have these like open stipulations of they're not great now, but eventually we're going to print cards because they're so weird that I'll probably interact with them in weird ways we didn't expect, and now they're great.
The day the Steam Flogger Boss is in a modern deck. Oh, yeah. That'll be the happiest day of my life.
All right, so what's your number nine?
My number nine is Ella Schnorn, Grand Zenobiate.
Okay, okay.
Which is going to be seeing an MM15 reprint.
Yeah, yeah. It's the super target out of Gifts decks.
Yeah, it's just... The interesting thing about Ella Schnorn to me, I mean, aside from it just being like a big body with awesome effects, is that static abilities like that that stay on the table and keep
like
your
what?
Opponents...
What does Ella Schnorn do?
I'll read it
out loud. Ella Schnorn, she's a house. How about that?
Yeah, oh, okay.
She's incredible.
Is she a brick house?
She's a brick house. A 7-mana brick house.
White 5 for a legendary creature, Praetor. She has a 4/7 vigilance. Other creatures you control get +2/+2. Creatures your opponents control get -2/-2. So there's a couple reasons that this card is super, super sweet. Number one, obviously, is that you can Gifts Ungiven for an Unburial Rites and Ella Schnorn and fail to find the other two, and these go in your graveyard, and the next turn you just get Ella Schnorn and just usually win the game. But the reason that I think Ella Schnorn is so interesting is because effects that keep your opponent's creatures at like a -2/-2, I think they're super rare.
Yeah.
We've talked about this in the Silly Hunted Handsome like revamps we've tried with like Illness in the Ranks or
other
cards like that. They're very hard effects to find. So the fact that you can land Ella Schnorn and, you know, effectively just nerf your opponents from ever playing creatures that are going to matter, that's really hard for some decks to deal with. I mean, you can path her, but if you don't have a path and you're a creature deck,
you're just wrecked.
Yeah.
I mean, the point is she comes down and she's kind of a board wipe that also is a threat that also locks people out of the game, and that's a really, really powerful ability. Like, I think right now her biggest limitation for being even stronger than she normally would is that Tarmogoyf and Rhino together kind of make it so there's like one deck out there that has just very resilient threats to what she's trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it's also funny that like, if you resolve her against the Splinter Twin list that's not playing Cryptic, they just can't get rid of her.
Oh, yeah.
They just have no way of getting out of there. They can combo and attack you with a bunch of like O2s.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why the Splinter Twin list is so resilient, is because all those creatures by themselves are still pretty darn good.
Yeah. True.
But then they're just nerfed entirely by
Ella Schnorn.
So one really, Ella Schnorn, yeah.
I feel like a lot of our followers would agree people should be playing more Ella Schnorn.
I agree. Oh, I heard an interesting rules interaction, by the way. If you have a 4/4 out and your opponent has an Ella Schnorn, your 4/4 is a 2/2. And if your opponent plays another Ella Schnorn before the legend rule is going to wipe one of them off the board, the -2/-2 thing will still apply and your creature will die.
State based actions.
Interesting. Yep.
They Very do. Interesting. We should do an entire episode actually on state based actions. We should have a judge here because I don't even think I can do the complicated rules that is state based actions a good outing. But
yeah, absolutely.
All right. So now, number eight.
Number eight for Josh was, you bet it, you knew it, Ella Schnorn, Grand Cenobite.
Okay.
And number eight for me is, I believe, not very legal in your format. It is called Lantax.
Yes. Lantax is great and not legal. There is a 8th edition card that does mini Plains Lantax for 2 mana.
Yeah, yeah. What's
interesting.
It called?
I don't even know what it's called.
Oh,
it's like Tithe, but for 2 mana.
Yeah.
Right.
Sacred... Something. Gift or something like that?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Lantax is a little restrictive because you have to get basic lands. And it's if your opponent has more lands than you in your upkeep, then you get to find 3 basic lands, put them in your hand. 3 lands.
Right. It basically draws you 3 cards. Because if you're playing it, you're playing a deck that can take advantage of it every turn if you let it.
Yeah, and that significantly
thins
out your deck.
Lantax is the best.
Yeah.
We should spend another 10 minutes talking about actually Josh's pick of Ella Schnorn because we haven't talked about that.
Yeah, we should definitely go deep on Ella Schnorn.
Moving on, my top number eight was Aven Mind Censor. For those who don't know, it is a 2/1 bird soldier. I think it's a soldier. It is a flyer. It has flash, and
it's a wizard. Actually,
is a wizard. Oh right,
it's a
you're
wizard,
right,
Harry.
Touche. I've actually called wizards off of a Cavern of Souls to play that. Back to what we're talking about. And its special ability is players can, if they were to search their library, can actually only search the top 4 cards of their library. So it really, like, it kind of hoses fetch lands, but in kind of a fair way. And it, like, is also a evasive threat that's really good. And it has flash, so you can, like, get people so they'll, like, fetch. And then you can kind of stop them from fetching. And they'll be like, oh, I just sacrificed the land. Stone ran at instant speed, blah, 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 blah.
So that's only number 8 for you.
Yeah, it's only number 8.
Interesting. It's higher on my list.
That's fine. I mean, it definitely actually moved around, and it was probably the most like jockeying per position. Eventually landed at 8. I mean,
this is a card that probably should have made it onto either of our lists, but I think it was just an honorable mention for us.
Has this been confirmed yet for Masters of Modern or Modern Masters?
You mean the podcast?
It's definitely confirmed on our list.
I don't think so.
Okay.
It could definitely be in there, I think, but something tells me it's not going to be. I think
really this was one of my big picks for the set, because like it hasn't been reprinted and it's future shifted, and they like printing the future shifted card in Modern Master sets in like regular border, and it's also like one of those $15 uncommons that doesn't make sense to be that expensive.
Is this card $15? Yeah. I didn't realize that.
The foil is like 40, so.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I love this card. We will get to my pick of it later, but I'm going to respond with Auriok Champion.
Yeah.
So Auriok Champion's a weird one because Auriok Champion is a 1-1. I'm just going to read it out loud.
I don't even know how to spell Auriok.
Auriok Champion.
Because it's a made-up fake word. White fake people.
It's white for a 1-1 human cleric, protection from black and protection from red. Whenever another creature comes into play, you may gain one life. So, this card exists in Soul Sisters decks.
Yep.
And it's really interesting because having pro black and pro red makes it super resilient as a blocker, and also
hard to kill.
And the life gain thing that can happen with this card when they can't get it off the table is so interesting. You can gain like 10, 11, 12 life in a game sometimes off of one of these cards. Especially if you throw it in a deck, if you throw it with any kind of equipment in some decks, you just start swinging in. I mean, it's a really interesting and like subversively powerful card that people don't realize they should be playing. But any person that plays either tokens or Soul Sisters, after tournaments, I remember like asking guys, can I see your list? And they go, oh yeah, this card, this has been the best card in my deck all day.
Right.
It's like a really powerful card.
Well, I mean, we've always talked, being able to fight lightning bolts is just inherently an important ability in the format.
Yeah.
And then the fact that you just get a lot of advantage from it, and if your deck is especially built to kind of take advantage of it, makes sense why it's one of the more powerful cards in the format.
Yeah, it doesn't see enough play, I don't think.
Oh, it definitely, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, number 7.
Jimbo.
Number 7 coming in. It's Sarah Ascendant for me.
Okay.
And Josh, it would be Enlightened Tutor, which is the one drop tutor that lets you look for an artifact or enchantment and put it on top of your library.
If Enlightened Tutor was legal in Modern, it would just be the happiest day of my life.
Oh, yeah. Enlightened Tutor, I literally am playing a Legacy deck that the entire planet just Enlightened Tutor for things. Yeah. And I think it has 6 different ways to kill a person, and you just have to Enlightened Tutor for them and hopefully get them.
It's definitely pretty high on my list of favorite cards.
Yeah.
It's a card that in years past, building casual decks and Highlander decks, I put it in every deck. It's like one of those cards that I just think about splashing white for in every deck in Highlander because it just should go in every deck.
Right.
But you only get it
in
one.
It is pretty powerful, yeah.
So, my number 7 is Ranger of Eos.
Mm. Oh gosh, this card is so good. I've wanted to play this in EDH for the longest time. It's just hard.
right. For those who don't know, it's a 3/2 for 4, 3 colors and a white. You search for 2 one drops from your deck and you can put them in your hand. It generally has seen a lot of play historically in Pod decks and Soul Sister decks. So those are the 2 main decks it sees a lot of play in. Because Pod has a bunch of just random tutor targets that are important, and especially Viscera Seer was kind of its main target back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it still sees play in the new Collective Company decks for the same reason, because getting Viscera Seer is really good. And it sees play in Soul Sisters because every card that you have that's a threat is a one drop.
They
have like, I think Soul Sisters has like 12, 16 one drops in the deck.
I would say 4 mana 3-for-1s in Modern are rare, unless you just get lucky. Unless you get lucky off of like a Supreme Verdict, like getting just like a 3-for-1 off of 4 mana is like pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
And it's a threat. It starts hitting them for 3 damage every turn, and if they can't handle it, it's pretty decent.
I love this card.
Plus, it's like if you bounce it with angels, it does a lot of cool things.
What does it search out? Does it get like Isamaru and stuff, or is it going for aggro? What's the plan?
In Soul Sisters, the plan is to get a combination of Moderus Sands, Sarah Ascendant, any of the Soul Sisters themselves, so Soul Attendant, Soul Warden. And then in Pod, it generally was used to get a Viscera Seer. So Viscera Seer is the 1 black vampire that can sack a creature and use Scry. Mm-hmm. And it's like when you were podding, it was kind of the top end of getting to your sack outlet, because it's hard to kind of get to a pod target that's less than 1 mana cost.
Right.
So it lets you kind of get it and just win with it. And then it does a lot of other cute things, like gets you some of your one of targets and other interesting things in that deck.
One of my favorite uses that I've ever seen of this card was a Fringe Foralist from a while back that played Vexing Devil. It was like a Boros Aggro list.
Oh yeah, I've seen these.
And late in the game, you'd play like two of these, one or two of these, so that like on turn five, you would just like play it and get two Vexing Devils.
Right.
And then, like when they're low on life, they just have to.
Well, in bird decks, they have like Goblin Guide too, so like worst case scenario, if you're just like, I just need to get in there for two damage.
Yeah. So that's sweet. I like the version of that deck that I like the most is, and I've messed around with Vexing Devil decks a lot, but the card Postmortem Lunge is like one of the, yeah, it's a weird card that I never mentioned and nobody ever knows what I'm talking about. It's a Phyrexian mana black card from New Phyrexia, which is Phyrexian mana black 1 and X, and it's Raise Dead for the turn.
Oh, okay.
Or not Raise Dead. It's a Corpse Dance for the turn. You get the creature into play with haste. But the reason that it's so sweet with Vexing Devil is you just pay 2 life and 1 and you get a Vexing Devil with haste. So
right.
I mean,
it's pretty good.
Yeah, I'm a fan. Anyway, my card next on my list is Leyline of Sanctity, the white Leyline that prevents them from being able to target you. It states, white and two colorless. You Sanctity. I should have.
Okay, it's two white, two colorless. When it comes into play, if it is in your opening hand when you start the game, you can put it into play for free, and it prevents player. You get hexproof.
It says you can't be the target of spells or abilities your opponents control. Originally printed in M11, not reprinted since.
But it will be reprinted in Modern Masters. Yep. It is confirmed. So this card's really good against burn and black decks. So it wrecks Liliana of the Veil. Liliana of it. Like,
oh,
you can both discard, but she can't make you sack a creature anymore.
Yeah.
And she can't use her ultimate on you. It also stops any of the discard, like Thoughtseize or any of that kind of stuff.
Seedrino can't target you.
Seedrino can't target you. And last but not least, Lightning Bolt can't target you or any burn cards. Burn just, like, loses to this card. So it's, like, it's generally played in sideboard cards because it shores up those two matchups.
Right. Yeah, it's really, really, really good against burn. Like, if you're building any kind of, like, silly shenanigans deck like I like to build, it's probably a pretty good idea to just have four of these in the sideboard because those decks are generally pretty bad against things like burn.
Right. I mean, it does show up your matchups in both of those decks where it's burn and targeted discard hurt weird shenanigan decks that you're trying to pull off.
Yeah, the original Hunted Handsome definitely played four of these in the sideboard.
All right.
Very interesting.
So, all right, number six.
All right, numero sixo for me and Josh both is the Big Mama herself, Bree DH, Avacyn, Angel of Hope.
Oh.
5 and 3 white, 8 total for an 8/8 legendary creature angel, flying vigilance, Avacyn, and all other permanents you control are indestructible.
Pretty much in Modern, this should read 8 mana. I don't do anything when I hit the table.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, played against the card in play, and it's. It's definitely strong, but it's definitely more mitigated towards commander where you're playing a lot of mana or reanimation is a thing or you have a commander. So it's this inevitability that you can't really have to worry about.
It's like pretty hilarious if you look at modern Magic design. Basically, the designers are just like, okay, we can basically if it doesn't do anything when it hits the table, we can make things as powerful as we want. We can push the power level on things that cost 7 and 8 and 9 mana so much because the chances of you actually getting to 7, 8, or 9, resolving this card, and then not having them do anything about it are so low, we don't care. Like, if this costs 8, we can just make it be the best card that you've ever seen. Whereas back in the day, Lord of the Pit or, like, you know, the green guy that looked like a... What the hell was he called?
I have no idea.
Anyway, big creatures from back in the day, just, like...
Right, and sometimes they do break the barrier, like... Emrakul or any of the Eldrazi or Grizzlebrand, which is the evil counterpart to Avacyn. And
isn't that funny how different they are? Like one is like one of the most amazing cards that's ever been printed at his mana cost, and the other is like should be pretty balanced, but just doesn't even compare.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's definitely very good in EDH, but I mean Grizzlebrand's banned in EDH, so the power level difference is huge, surprisingly. All right, so my number six is Wrath of God.
Really?
Yeah. So,
Wrath of God.
So a lot of people go between Wrath of God and
Supreme Verdict,
but really Wrath of God is the better choice in control decks, especially because there's not a lot of decks out there that have counter magic that are trying to stop you from killing all their creatures. Mm-hmm. Yes, Merfolk exists, but that's like not the main reason to be running a board wipe. And the cards that people bring specifically against you, like Thrun against control decks, are way more of a problem, and being able to destroy them because they can't regenerate is a much more valuable source of damage and card advantage that you need in the deck.
It is like sort of funny that how few cards get printed nowadays where regeneration is an actual relevant ability. We don't really talk about it very often. Like, it's not like something.
Well, Wizards made a very so Wizards did two things. One, a couple years ago, they made a concerted effort to make it so regeneration mattered, and you can see that kind of happening with Zendikar when they printed Day of Judgment, which was Wrath of God without the regeneration clause, and they stopped printing destroy target creature they can't regenerate because it makes regenerate not matter,
right?
And it's like a stupid ability then. But then over the last 2 years, they've kind of made a concerted effort to just stop making regeneration cards because it's such a weird ability,
right?
Or at least tournament playable ones.
It's like protection in the sense that it's the rule set that goes with it's very antiquated. This whole
it's just
thing
like it's
explain.
A lot of baggage that it doesn't really accomplish. It's like very flavorful, and I do think regeneration. They've talked about like the three mechanics they don't like are regeneration, protection from anything, and intimidate.
Yeah,
and we're going to see probably in the next couple of years a switch away from using those mechanics a lot, if not getting rid of some of them entirely.
Protection is the most complicated of all, and
it's also weird because like a red Wrath effect doesn't kill it, but Wrath of God kills it. But there's so many weird corner cases with protection in general that it's a mechanic that's pretty difficult.
It's just antiquated. Yeah.
What's your number six?
Stony Silence.
So
Stony Silence is the ultimate anti-affinity card. It's the, like, I'm going to mull to the point that I draw this if I have a bad matchup against affinity.
So this is my number five. Since that's next anyways, we'll skip a little bit ahead. Stony Silence to me is the, and of all of the different, like, because white has a lot of enchantments, and we mentioned one of them with Leyline, of just like, I hate strategies. But Stony Silence to me is the closest thing to Blood Moon in white. Where, like, there are multiple matchups where if you play this, they can't beat you. And
Tron
they basically
is...
game. Tron and Affinity.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, like, three different Tron lists, but... And Tezzerator decks, if you want to, like, stretch to Tier 3, Tier 2.
If you want
to
act like decks that we build actually win tournaments.
Yeah, yeah. but Stony Silence, it just comes down and against Affinity. Affinity can't beat it. Like, they're like, starting to play Tarmogoyf and in Soul Artifact finally started seeing a lot of play because of how good it is against...
Right.
Or because it, like, helps them a little bit to fight Stony Silences. Because it's just, like, all of their cards just start being terrible.
I think it's really funny when you look at cards that, like, you play a lot of Limited in a format. And there's cards that you open as your rare and Limited.
You're just like,
exactly. And then, you're after Limited, you end up with, like, 6-7 copies of some of these rares because you play so much Limited.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just always funny when one of them, like this card, ends up making a huge impact on a format later on.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Like, I remember opening so many Stony Silences and just being like, trash, trash, trash. Like, now it's a card that everybody's always looking for before tournaments.
Jimmy, what is your number fives?
Numero 5 for Jay Wong would be Oblation, which got a little worse thanks to the Tuck rule that was implemented in EDH.
Right.
Oblation is a commander-specific card. It was originally printed in Onslaught, I believe, and it's 2 and a white, but they reprinted it in 2 of the commander products now, and it's an instant. Owner of target non-land permanent shuffles it into his or her library, then draws 2 cards. Now, you can oblate your own thing to just draw 2 cards in white as well. But for the most part, you're just getting rid of interesting permanents.
Is
yeah,
that,
like
is it
planeswalkers.
Am I?
No, it's not shapeshifter.
It's not shapeshifter.
No,
okay.
No, it's just an instant. Yeah,
it's
and
an
then
old card, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's
there
from Onslaught.
There's a shapeshifter version of this in white, I think. Maybe not.
Interesting.
Maybe I'm wrong. Okay.
Oh, are you talking about Crypt Swap?
Yes.
Crypt Swap doesn't do this. It
okay.
Exiles the creature and they get a 1/1.
Okay, it's a 1. Okay, instead of draw 2 cards. Fair enough.
Right.
Never
right.
mind. Ignore me. I don't know what I'm talking about.
And the other Josh's number 5 would be Humility, which is the housiest of housing
against Embercool
cards. Yeah. 2/2 white. It's an enchantment. Each creature loses all abilities and is a 1/1 creature. It's amazing how often this will be on the board, and we just keep playing things, thinking something's gonna happen, and then you realize, oh wait, no, it's a 1/1.
Right.
The sweetest part of Humility is like I had this great experience for about a year there where I was playing a lot of Legacy, and I had like this Delver Baleful Strix deck that I was playing, and I remember going up against Show and Tell decks, and I got 2 copies of Affinity, Humility, I traded for, and it was a pretty expensive card. I feel like it was like at least $20. And I remember just being so proud of myself for actually getting the copies of Humility. And, like, the satisfaction that is experienced when they show and tell Emrakul and you put, like, Humility down.
Right.
It's so satisfying.
Right, right.
It's like this stupid, outdated 4-drop that you, in Legacy, you would never hard cast it. Like, I guess you could, but it's
no,
like,
no, it's easy. I mean, Enchantress decks play it, and decks like Miracles play it because it's just another way to, like... You can. It's a tutorable target with
Light and Tutor.
And Light and Tutor that can just house some decks.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a sweet card for
you. Yeah, it's definitely cool. My number five was Stony Silence.
Which is funny, because my number five is Avon Mind Sensor.
Oh, perfect. So but, we kind of did name number five already.
Yeah, so I didn't really talk about Mind Sensor at all, or very, very much, okay, when you brought it up. And I just wanted to say really quickly, the thing I like so much about Mind Sensor is that there's this thing with three drops that aggressively are disruptive. So we talk about three drops are really difficult to play in Modern. Like Geist, for instance, is a great card, but it's really hard to get away with in Modern.
Right.
The difference between Geist and Mind Sensor is that if you power out Mind Sensor on turn two with like a mana creature, like there was a when Junk first started to be the deck when they banned Bloodbraid, mm-hmm, and all the pros that one, it was like at one GP were playing like the version with like a Johnny Vengeance and Souls.
Right.
I just remember there was like Kibler and a few people were playing like four Mind Sensor main deck with four birds and four
high. Right.
And it's super powerful in response to a fetch land.
Yeah.
Early on. And it's like a 2-1 flyer. It's like, it's just cards like this. They just need to print more of cards like this. Disruptive cards that are, you know, a flying body. Like it's sort of.
Well, the hate birds. There's the new one also, Hushwing Griff, which it's not on my top 10 list, but it will be brought up because the Twitter question someone answered with Hushwing Griff. But yeah, no, it's definitely.
It's the Torpor Orb.
It's a cool archetype of card that I would love to see more printing of.
Yeah, I think it's because it just makes. It makes, in a format like Modern, it makes it more possible to play creature decks.
Right. And we've talked about before, in the format right now, as many ways to kind of make it so mana bases are more diverse and make it they're a risk to be playing fetch lands are better. Right. Like, I've argued for Stifle, and this is basically Stifle with legs in many ways. Okay, so number four, Jimmy Wong. We're now in the top four, guys, so these are when
we
the cards get super strong.
We have entered the top four, that's right. So my four was a split between Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile. Yeah. Both very similar, both incredibly good. And in EDH, their downsides are even, I guess, more insignificant than they normally would be.
Right.
Because I could see some of these effects actually being pretty relevant in a 1v1 game with 20 life. But in EDH, it's just, like, it gets rid of the most powerful thing almost always.
In EDH, the format is all about recursing things, and the ability to stop someone from being able to recur their single target is really important. Exactly. What was the other card for?
For Josh, it would be straight up Armageddon, Destroy All Lands.
Yeah, it's a good card.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
And, of course, the power level just goes up when you have so many crazy non-basics and so many wacky things happening in EDH that something like
it's
that is
so
truly
surprising because Josh has gone on the record multiple times about how Blood Moon is his, like, least favorite card, and he hates anyone who plays Blood Moon and will, from that point on, want to murder them in the table from that point, like, period. But he's like, Armageddon's okay.
Yeah, it's so funny.
I think it's interesting. But, okay, moving on.
What do you guys got?
Number four for me, Elsbeth Knight Errant. This is the Planeswalker. Yes. Elsbeth, the first one.
Wait, this means that one of my top four is not going to be on your list?
Apparently.
That's insane.
So she is a Planeswalker. She costs four mana. She has 2+ abilities. She's the first one to ever have 2+ abilities. She either makes a token or shoots a guy. He gives +3/+3 from flying. And those are her two abilities. And then when she ultimates, she makes everything indestructible. She's like a mini Avacyn, as we just explained, on her end step.
So interesting.
She's pretty great.
The endingness.
I thought about putting Elsbeth on my top 10, but what I realized at the end of it was just like, as powerful as I think that this card is, it's very rare that it actually sees play in decks, and it comes down on turn four without disrupting your opponent. So it's really hard to justify playing it because ultimately what you sort of really want out of Elsbeth is kind of what you get out of Lingering Souls to some degree. I mean, that's sort of the reason people play Lingering Souls.
Right. I think she's much better in Zoo decks and aggro decks
as the
top end of, like, I need to get in there with, they have a Tarmogoyf or a Rhino in the way. I just need to, like the jump ability is more important to me almost than, like, the tokens are nice because it protects herself, and that's the key to a good Planeswalker, is some way to protect them. But in reality, the more important ability with her in Modern is the ability just to, like,
top your curve.
I need to win. I need some way to get around. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, it's just that this
plus
is not...
like her and Geist of St. Traft. Yeah, is bonkers.
this is not the argument that I was making against Gideon. Gideon is like the real. It does make like, but this is actually super powerful, and I could justify putting this into a build. Like, I've built it into decks of mine before.
Right.
I was just sort of trying to figure out like its place in Modern. It just doesn't feel like it has much of one.
I think part of that is just Zoo isn't that Zoo is waning currently. But once it starts waxing...
Wait till my Delver Zoo
comes out. All right. What's your number four?
Wall of Omens.
Wall of Omens. I love Wall of Omens.
Yeah.
So you were asking if probably one of your top three cards is on my list. Wall of Omens isn't on my list. Okay. I completely just blanked on it.
It's funny, too, because you love that card.
So I guess the arguments against Wall of Omens is... it needs other pieces to be as powerful as you want it to be, and on the ground threats in Modern are lower than a four drop or four power are pretty small. Like most threats in Modern are flying creatures, or they're like Tarmogoyf, which is a 5/4 or 5/6, or you know Rhino, which is a 5/6.
Mere Superior's a 5/6,
yeah. Right. Mere Superior's the card everyone's worried about. Like Affinity, all flyers. In fact, all flyers are unblockable. So, like, it definitely runs into that issue as a limitation. I think Wall of Omens was way, way better when Bloodbraid Elf was in the format because it was kind of like your answer to Bloodbraid Elf. They got advantage of their Bloodbraid Elf, but your 0/4 wall cancels out their
advantage.
And it's also pretty good against Liliana of the Veil. So Jund decks being good in the format means that this is good in the format. And if they unban Bloodbraid Elf, I'd be willing to see it kind of come back. But why is it great?
I think it's great for a couple of reasons. I think, number one, the decks that will give you the most trouble if you're unprepared are aggro decks. So, like a mono red deck or an affinity deck, if you go into a tournament, somebody really just wants to... I mean, our good friend Andrew Brown, friend of the podcast, he veers towards aggro decks in this format because he feels like it's very, very difficult to prepare with your sideboard and be ready in the format. So right. If you want to just take a battle axe with you and just crush... you just take a really aggressive deck. And I think a lot of good players have that same attitude.
It's easier to be aggressive in Modern than it is to be reactive.
So if you're a good player and you can sequence your turns correctly, then you can win. And so I think this card's great because it's not... it's great in a lot of the same ways that Spellskite's great, but...
card advantage in a 0/4 that blocks things. I do think it's better now than it probably has been in the past Moderns because of Burn.
Yeah.
Just being a deck in the format, and it definitely is a brick wall to burn, and being good against burn is, like, you had Ariok Champion on your top 10, and one of the reasons it's good generally is just burn. And so being a good catch-all answer against burn that is also okay against everything, because at worst it cycles, and at worst it's like, your Liliana can't get rid of it, or, like, the fact that Pod also isn't in the format also helps you a lot.
Right.
Because birthing Pod was definitely just... oh, I don't care. You have a 0/4. I'm just going to go around you with my, like, infinite amount of creatures and card advantage.
There's also, like, really, really cool deck design space that exists with this card that you've seen people take advantage of. Like, when people were playing those really, really cool...
Kiki Jiki. The blue-white-red Kiki Jiki list where, like, you Splinter Twin on a Wall of Omens and you just, like...
draw cards.
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Right.
You can do some really...
those decks are still
stuff.
Probably playable. Like, I would imagine... them making a comeback.
So I'm just going to try to read your mind here, Alex. I'm going to guess that this card pairs extremely well with your number three.
Nope, you're wrong. Jimmy, go.
It's not your number three?
My number three, which also lost a little bit of value, but is still very good, is Terminus.
Okay,
love Terminus. Yep.
Yeah, you can miracle it, put everything on, all creatures on the bottom of their owner's libraries. It would just house a board, especially when there's four or five people playing. Josh had Lantax. So Josh valued Lantax much higher than I did.
Right.
I just put Lantax a little behind because in general you don't play that many basic non-basics in EDH.
This Terminus is a whole lot better than the one in Walking Dead. Whammy.
So Terminus, I think the biggest limitation, because I think Terminus is a very powerful card, and in Legacy it's like in the most played deck and possibly the best deck, and as a four of. The problem with Modern is there aren't good Brainstorm-like effects or Ponder-like effects or Jace or Top. So there's not good ways to set up Miracles very well. So they become a little bit more swingy. I actually think, though, that Terminus probably, if there becomes a much more creature on the board archetype that's dominant, it could probably take another good looking at. It depends how much better it is than Wrath of God, or worse it is, and how much the swinginess of having to get the 6 mana really affects the matchup.
Right.
Like, at least in Modern or in Legacy, you have, like, 10 different ways to kind of get it back on top of your deck, where, like... in Modern, there's only one card that can kind of maybe set it up, possibly.
It's also interesting because, I mean, I feel like if you are able to resolve Terminus and you do put a lot of cards on the bottom of their library, doesn't it make their ability to fetch, use a fetch land just way more complicated because now they have to figure out, like, okay, well, I know the bottom five cards in my library and I don't want to draw any of those now, so if I fetch, then my chances of getting my out are even worse, etc.
That is something to keep in consideration. Like, there's definitely times where you shouldn't fetch if you know, like, I don't want the cards on my bottom. But more often than not, it's more like, oh, I want that Tarmogoyf back. I should shuffle.
Right. Yeah.
If you're terminusing, it's probably meaning that there's something you want to get rid of, which means they probably want to keep it around.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense.
Unless you're playing against like a deck that's like all Birds of Paradise and you just kind of got rid of some of their mana, and that could be a different conversation. But I don't think that's – you shouldn't keep that into account. I'd rather maybe draw birds and have a mana in play than not have mana.
Right. That makes sense.
So my number three is Lingering Souls.
Lingering Souls at three.
It lost 1 point maybe because it's kind of a black card also and originally wasn't even on the list because it's like, I don't know if I can include this. But I do think it is one of the most powerful cards in the format.
It's my number two.
It's your number two. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. We can talk about it. It's really good. For those who don't know, it's 1 white, 2 colorless to put 2/1/1 tokens in the play. But then you can also flash it back from the graveyard, which means you can cast it from the graveyard for 1 black and a colorless. So it can total about 4 threats. When you're playing Liliana of the Veil, you can discard it and kind of like draw half a card instead of discarding a card with Liliana, which is really good. Though that's more of a black card at that point.
Right.
But it's definitely the main back between Abzan decks, and the reason Abzan is probably the most played version of black-green X decks, and as well token decks in general.
It's really funny to think that this card has been legal for years, but it really only picked up steam as a big-time threat in the format when those Jund decks switched over to being... to playing Souls. It, like, that was, like, I remember that switch.
Yeah, but that was also, that was within the first 6 months of the format existing. Like, that first Pro Tour where Jund dominated was, like, after, like, the combo, fall when Modern was first created.
Right.
So, like, once Zoo was gone, then Jund became the best thing on the planet, and they put Lingering, like, that's when they, like, as soon as people realized that, they started playing Lingering Souls, and then that's when Hellkite started seeing play because it eats Lingering Souls.
I know.
It became this like pseudo Cold War of
people used
1/1 tokens.
Yeah, for the 3-drop and the value 3-drop in those decks, people used to be like, is it Finks or Jarl's Messenger? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Like, it's like now it's just like Souls is the best 3-drop.
Right.
That's
by like
one.
A wide margin. Well, uh-huh. And part of that is, I think, the realization of how great Liliana the Veil is and how great Lingering Souls is with it and against it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Their relationship, and especially since they came from the same block, is one of the most interesting Magic card relationships, I think, in the game. Because it's like it's up there with like Lightning Bolt and Snapcaster Mage almost, where it's like they combo so well together, but they're also like the best answers to each other.
Right.
That was my number three. So that was your number two. What was your number three?
Restoration Angel.
Which is my number
Resto.
Two.
Nice.
I think I gave Resto maybe a little extra points. It's possible Lingering Souls is better because I just have a deep, deep, deep love for Restoration Angel.
Yeah.
I do think that it does one of the more interesting things between the two cards. And I do think like cards like Wall of Omens get much better.
Yeah.
Cards like Blade Splicer, which I don't have anywhere on my list, get much better.
Started seeing a little more play recently.
And it's starting to see a lot of play. And it's a combo. It does do combo stuff with Kiki-Jiki and like other cards. So it has a lot of interesting things that it does.
Right.
And it's like bonkers because it's a flash 3/4 flyer. I mean, we've talked about Restoration Angel before. It's probably on my list of like top 5 cards ever. And which is why I gave it a higher rating than maybe Lingering Souls.
It's a great card. I mean, we talked about how well it pairs with Kiki-Jiki. We talked about how well it pairs with Wall of Omens. It's funny because when it came out, you and I had a bunch of conversations about it that were just like, this card seems like it's going to be really good. You bought a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
But it was like, everybody was really focused on the Flicker ability.
Right.
Instead of the fact that it's
like, Flicker can't be, I mean, it'll be okay. Like, Flicker Wisp saw some play, but you're like, no.
Well, it was
Flash,
just,
baby. Come on.
The 3/4 Angel for Flash at 4 mana is just was unheard of beforehand, and now it, like, also gets value.
Yeah, nobody was just like, oh, wait a minute. It's a flyer that has 4 toughness that has flash?
Right.
You know, it's actually interesting. As I was looking through the database today, white cards, and making this list, something came to mind is that nobody has tried playing a flash deck with Advent of the Worm in Modern yet. And
No, that's seen play.
It eats Siege Rhino?
Yeah.
And
it does.
It seems pretty good to me. I don't know.
Well, so, like, one of the reasons I like Restoration Angel is, and we've talked about this before, but there are really 3 limitations to Modern as a format when playing a card and considering a card. Abrupt Decay, Lightning Bolt, and Splinter Twin, which are, is this a threat that if I tap for it, I lose? Is this going to die to the most played removal spells? And Restoration Angel passes all 3 of those tests.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like, it comes into play, and the end of your opponent's turn, so them Splinter Twinning, you can respond to their Splinter Twin instead of playing it. It and is abrupt decay and lightning bolt proof. Not to mention, it also can save one of your other threats from lightning bolt or abrupt decay.
Yeah, it's a very, very powerful.
It's definitely
card.
An awesome card.
Jimmy, what was your number two?
My number two was Linvala, Keeper of Silence. Because I think, yeah, I mean, activated abilities are abundant in EDH, and I think this is, I mean, it's also a 4-mana 3-4 without flash in this case, but I think this just has more far-reaching effects than the Resto Angel would. Restoration Angel made our honorable mentions list, but in EDH, you're usually using it to build around that card. You know, the flicker ability by itself is great, but unless your deck has multiple ways of really abusing it, then it's just an okay angel, you know?
Right. You use a former modern, like, Silver Bullet in pod decks?
Yeah, so, like, Linvala is probably the one card that, if this list was made 6 months ago, would have been much, much, much higher than, versus not on any of the lists at all. And right. That's, I mean, part of it is
we
just
made
like,
our list back in January as well, so it
right,
was,
right.
I mean, that's why we still have Terminus and Oblation and stuff on it.
Well, yeah, and if you look at, I mean, modern Birthing Pod existed, and Linvala was one of the best cards in the format at that point. But now it's decent, but it's not nearly as strong as it used to be. And now it's just like, oh, a beater that might get you value versus, like, an important piece of one of the most powerful decks.
Right, right.
So before we get to number one, I'm guessing none of you guys on the internet can guess what number one is. There's no way. We're going to do our honorable mentions. These are the cards that could have made it but wouldn't have made it. We only actually have five, so this is the first time we're doing this, but we met ahead of time and figured it out separately.
We'll do quick explanations of each one.
Yeah, quick explanations. Tell me what they do, why they're important, and move on. So number one of the honorable mentions is Thalia, Guardian of Thraven. This is the 2/1 first striking creature for two that opponents' spells or all spells non-creature spells cost one more mana.
So it's good. It's a Hate Bears creature.
It's you play in Zoo and Hate Bears. It's like relatively efficient. I think it gets hurt by the fact that like lightning bolt's just everywhere,
right?
And like stuff like and more so the same reason kind of Bob has fallen out of favor in general in modern is there's a lot of ways to kill one toughness creatures that like you also gain value from the player.
Just gets electrolyzed.
And it's like a Tarmogoyf based format, so it gets kind of outclassed pretty quickly by the things that it's not able to hit out.
Right.
Number two, Archangel of Thune. This is the other Birthing Pod Angel target.
Combo piece.
This just saw a lot of play recently. It's still seeing play because it's part of that combo, and it kind of can just do really well in collected company decks.
Right.
It is a 5-drop, and it only sees play in that one deck, but it definitely is very strong in that deck.
You can't get it with collected company, though.
True, but they play four of it, and then they just get the other pieces of the combo with collected company.
They probably play like at least one Congregation at Dawn
as well. Yeah, yeah. Number three, Martyr of Sands. We've talked about a lot of other pieces to the Soul Sisters deck. This is kind of the back. Like, Martyr is the real piece of that deck that's important.
It's a 1/1 for one white that states one colorless and sacrifice it. Reveal X white cards from your hand and gain 3 times that much life.
Yeah, so it gains a crap ton of life real quick.
You can gain like 12 life on turn two pretty easily. And yeah,
so it's really good. Next, Apostle's Blessing. I think you put this on the honorable mentions list, so I'm going to let you talk about it.
Yeah, Blessing is really interesting. So I've talked a lot. I talked earlier today about Postmortem Lunge, about the Phyrexian mana cards. And they're a hole in the in like sort of Magic design, and also when brewers, when they're thinking about using these cards, they don't really often think about using some of the less utilized ones. This card sees play in definitely sees play in Infect. That's the biggest place that it'll see play. But it's great because it can go in any deck. It essentially costs one colorless to make your creature unblockable or protect it. That's the nature of protection as an ability, as well as the fact you can target an artifact. So if you have like a piece of a combo, if you're trying to say like Mindcrank, Duskmantle, Guildmage combo or something like that, you need to protect your Mindcrank. There's not that many cards that do it for one colorless at instant speed.
Right. I mean, the it sees a lot of play in Infect. Beyond that, it's a card that should be kept in consideration if you're like, I need to protect my creatures from
stuff. Or I just need to protect my combo because it protects almost everything.
Right. And it's great against Abrupt Decay.
Yeah.
Splinter 20, I think, has seen play in Splinter 20 in the past.
Exactly.
And the last honorable mentions is, I don't know, it's getting a drum roll because the real drum roll will be next, but Revelark.
Oh, we had Revelark on our honorable mentions as well.
Love Revelark.
It's a 4/3 flying. When it leaves play, you can return 2 creatures with 2 or less power from the graveyard to play. Or is it
pretty good?
Yeah, and it's just really good. It sees a lot of play.
It just brings a lot of things back.
Yeah,
especially if those have entered the battlefield effects. Oh my gosh!
Right. Glenn actually used to say this, that like it was the major inevitability part of Birthing Pod. And the reason one of the reasons that deck was so strong was that this card existed, because no matter what, you could get the cards that they answered back.
Always.
Pretty easily. Also great with Restoration Angel, just saying.
Right. So last but not least.
Well, I mean, for our honorable mentions, we threw on Monastery Mentor because we didn't know where that card was going to end up.
Okay.
It's fair.
Still hasn't kind of... It's like the best card in Vintage, but it hasn't seen a lot of play in Modern yet.
Yeah, exactly. We also had Rest in Peace as one of our definite top...
Right, we have on that Graveyard Hate in Modern ends up not being as important, partly because there just hasn't been a great, great Graveyard deck. And
yeah.
Scavenging Ooze is just stronger in Modern because it's not, you don't need as much of a blanket answer. You just kind of need, like, even like the deck that plays it the most is the deck you'd think would want to have it against themselves, which is like you would think that Living End decks wouldn't want Rest in Peace played against them, but they actually end up playing it or being fine with it because it makes their board wipe just that much better.
Right.
Yep. Now they have instant speed 3 mana board wipes versus reanimation spells, and that's still pretty bonkers.
Yeah. A couple of other big ones were Iona, of course, Shield of Emeria, but that falls in the same category as Avacyn, and you guys will never just really honestly play that realistically.
Iona sees more play than Avacyn because...
Just because she does something when she hits
It's also very, very good against burn in reanimation decks. So, like, instead of Elesh Norn, they do that, and then they lock out their opponent. Like, burn literally can't beat it.
The old Gifts Tron decks would just literally play, like, one of each. They'd play one Elesh Norn and one Iona.
Because, some decks get completely destroyed by Elesh Norn, and some decks get completely destroyed by Iona.
It's also weird. I've made this mistake once in a tournament. Her ability is not... as it enters the battlefield triggered ability.
You choose it when it's coming into play.
You choose it when it's coming into play. So if you're playing against it, you're inexperienced with it, you may wait. You'll say the color and you'll try to respond to it by like burning them or playing a spell. And I tried that once and he's like, no, you can't play that spell anymore. You already said, okay, it resolves. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I learned my lesson.
All right. So drum roll, Jimmy, would you like to do the announcer voice for the first?
And you've heard the top 10. We've gone all the way from 10 to 2, and you heard what almost made the list. But now we've got the one and only number one pick. I don't know what the song was. So I'm going to go ahead with my picks first. and I have a feeling that this pick is not going to be on your guys' list.
It would be if it was legal. I know what.
If it was legal, for me it was Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah, so sweet. One of my favorite cards. Another one of my favorite. I guess I like white more than I let on, but yep, not legal. Yeah,
and Josh liked Terminus for number one.
Josh didn't have Stoneforge Mystic on his list at all.
He didn't, and I think it was, I mean, usually when we make these lists, we try and keep all the cards under $20-$25.
Okay. Stoneforge, so you're not like sort of, Moat, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Stoneforge was kind of on the brink of that price range. But yeah, Stoneforge was my number one because the card is freaking dope.
So right. If let's just say hypothetically they were to unban Stoneforge. They never will. But let's just say they did in Modern. Would Blue-White-Red become the best deck immediately?
Blue-White, like a Blue-White-Red Delver deck?
No, not even. Just Blue-White-Red as it stands, except you just play Stoneforge and Batterskull, and that's right. Just what you do on turn two?
It plays how... Stoneblade. Stoneblade becomes the best deck. I think it becomes a tier one deck. I kind of want to know how much better she is than Tarmogoyf.
I think when you can...
I know she's much better. I do think she's better. And I do think Batterskull is a much more dangerous threat than Tarmogoyf. But Tarmogoyf brick walls Batterskull. I mean, they are gaining life and you still have to deal with it. But this is also a format where like Siege Rhino. The problem is I actually don't think Blue-White-Red becomes the best deck. I think just Abzan becomes the best deck.
Oh, you just put it in Abzan.
Yeah, you just play Tarmogoyf with Siege Rhino with Stoneforge Mystic. I don't know how you beat that deck.
Because those guys already play a Batterskull.
Yeah.
Like usually one in the main or in the side.
Right.
Oh my god, that sounds awful.
Yeah, awful. I wish it wasn't too powerful. I kind of wish Batterskull didn't exist because I think like a Cobblade like deck where you're getting the green-black equipment sword seems really cool, but nope, that'll never happen. All right, so number one, white card.
It's kind of anticlimactic.
Kind of anticlimactic because Jimmy also kind of stole the thunder earlier and I was trying to pass it under the bridge. Path to Exile. The second most played removal spell, third most played... Top three most played removal spell.
It's one of the most important cards in the format.
Yeah, it's like the answer to all the things that are like, oh, but it, like, I honestly think Lightning Bolt is a weird card because it forces cards that Lightning Bolt are good against to not be played, meaning it's not as good as it normally would be. Like, if you came up to a tournament that no one expected Lightning Bolt and were playing Lightning Bolts, it would be the best card in the format. But because everyone's like, well, I'm not going to play X3s.
Right.
So, like, it's just not as good.
Yeah.
Versus Path, which is just like, oh, you have a thing I don't want to live through? Okay, it's gone now. Goodbye.
Yeah, that is really interesting. It
Answers Seadrino, answers Goya, answers everything. Just everything.
I think they knew when they were making the format, I think they knew sort of like, okay. Like,
it's a point that Path is in the format. They want, like, Swords of Plowshare would be too good, but right. Path allows them to have kind of the answer they're looking for.
Yeah, it's one of those cards that plays so well in terms of the balance of the format because of the small number of basic lands that actually get played.
Yeah, so it encourages you to play more basic lands. It also has a weird interaction with Mana Leak, so white-blue decks aren't as bonkers as they maybe could be because it actively works against your other card. Like, Path and Mana Leak are bad with each other. Though Path and Snapcaster Mage is still really good, so there's definitely interesting choices. And I think it's one of the reasons I like Remand better than Mana Leak in the format.
Yeah, well, it just draws you a card. Drawing cards at instant speed magic
is
like
great.
It's
the greatest feeling ever. Cool. So that is the top 10 modern cards. We both had Path. I don't know if you guys figured that out, but it was pretty.
Clearly.
It was like the easiest. I think Restoration and Lingering Souls and where they kind of placed was definitely an interesting conversation, and the fact that you didn't have Elsbeth on your list. I was pretty confident on my top four, and then you didn't have Restoration Angel or Elsbeth. I was like, oh, that's weird.
Well, I asked you and deleted it like immediately, just right before we started.
I know.
And the only reason I did was, like I said, it just doesn't feel like a card that defines modern in the way that some of the others do. But then again, you can make the argument for like Siege Rhino, and like it's the same thing. It's just a really powerful four drop.
Yeah.
Siege Rhino sees a ton of play. So.
Right. With an immediate effect. Like.
Yeah.
And it does kind of the same thing Siege Rhino does. It's instead of gaining you through life, I guess it just does six, kind of, like, theoretically. All right, so I asked you guys on Twitter before we started recording a question, and that question was, which white cards that are really cool don't see enough play in Modern than you wish would see more play? So I'm going to go through some of the people that answered, and we're going to hear what they thought. First is Craig. Craig. His Twitter is @3beansoup.
I thought it was Craig Blanchett for a second.
I know.
Craig plays Modern? Whoa.
I know. It'd be crazy. He kind of cheated. He put Glittering Wish, which is a gold card. No gold cards. Cheater.
There were a lot of gold cards on Hybrid.
It was indeed a wish.
We had to cut.
Did you not notice that Kitchen Finks didn't show up? Yeah. And that's more white than Glittering Wish is.
Yeah, it's true. That is technically a gold card.
This is a racist
When I was
list.
Reorganizing my binders, I was looking at all the Hybrid mana symbols for EDH. I was like, those are technically gold cards. Oh, all
right. Right. Riley Jones @ChessHazard, Tallow Wisp.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That was because Tallow Wisp was part of that old the heartbeat of Spring deck, I think.
Yeah.
Unless I'm mixing things up here. Tallow Wisp, I think, is the card that lets you search for an aura. Tallow Wisp. One white, one colors for 1/3 spirit. Whenever you play a spirit or arcane spell, you may search your library for an enchant creature card, reveal it, and put it into your hand if you do shuffle your library. There's some interaction that I'm just like totally blanking on here that makes this card sweet.
Okay. Anytime there's a repeatable tutor effect, you're obviously doing something interesting.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can imagine seeing more play if there's the right engine.
Whenever you play a spirit, you just ignore the arcane, but spirit in terms
of
creatures. You play a spirit creature and you search for an aura,
right.
and then it gets awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Merlin. Nice. Some guys have great names. I'm going to just single syllables, but his Twitter is @DurCockXXL.
Oh, yes, Merlin. He listens to the Command Zone as well. He won a prize off of us.
Oh,
and
nice.
Koch, because it is German, I believe.
Uh-huh. Nice. Grand Abolisher and Hushwing Griffin.
Yes.
Yes. Hushwing Griff. Yeah, we talked about that. That was another one of our honorable mentions just because it does Torpor Aura, but with a creature instead.
It kind of is an Aven Mind Sensor. I mentioned it earlier in this cast even where it's like a 2/1 Flash Flyer, which are like the hate birds versus the hate bears.
Awesome.
Nice.
Hushwing Griff is definitely a card that I like to see more play. I think it's better now with all of the randos running around that there are more end of the battlefield effects and it just shuts down Twin.
Yeah, it's really good. I just remembered with Talos what makes it so sweet. Guess what 3-drop creature is a spirit?
Geist of Sandshraft.
Oh. So you go Talos, then you play
Geist and then
you
get
search
like
for Angelic Destiny or like something absurd.
Angelic Destiny. I mean, then that makes me really happy. I'm just going to build that deck tomorrow.
You don't remember you and I were talking about that deck at one point, the blue-white hexproofy deck that played Steel of the Godhead? Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Geist and Steel of the Godhead, and you'd slap Steel of the Godhead onto a Geist, and then it becomes a 4/4... unblockable,
indestructible,
hexproof lifelink creature.
Oh, yeah. What were we talking about? Building your own Bane Slayer? We're talking about building your own Bane Slayer?
Exactly.
All right. So, Grand Abolisher, for those who don't know, white, it makes it so people can't play spells on other people's turns. I think the only reason this card doesn't see that much play is that counter spells aren't good.
Yeah.
Right.
I guess it kind of shuts down Twin a little bit, but then they could also just play
Do
and
anything
win.
Else.
Yeah. Glenn Jones.
Glenn.
Glenn Jones.
Previous friend of the podcast said Celestial Colonnade and Restoration Angel. I think he's saucy because Blue White Red isn't really good anymore. Or isn't seeing a lot of play at the moment.
Well, he was trying to make it happen with Cruz, right?
Well, I mean, it was good before the ban, and then we're just its worst matchup is junk because they're all the value. Rum Titan did Gideon draw. I actually got a few Gideons. I got like three of them.
I'm gonna get panned on this. Yeah. Reviews.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I'm gonna say some of the names. Rum Titan, who's Mr. Blades at Mr. Blades. Katie Neal, who is at KatieN_14, also said Gideon and mentioned that he's their homeboy.
Gideon's a pretty cool dude.
Yep.
He's one indestructible human.
He definitely is. A cool interaction that was brought up was the fact that you can play Gideon, attack with him, Restor Angel, and then plus him so that you get two triggers off the Gideon, deal the six, and get the protect yourself. Just saying. Yeah, he's pretty good.
Pretty good card.
Ben. Steven Ledger, the last one, last but not least, at Sledger says, he mentioned Brimaz and Seance. Mm. So Brimaz, I think, does see a little play in token decks. It's the three drop, one white cat, 3/4, that when it attacks and blocks, you put a 1/1 creature into play.
Yeah. Holy moly. Cat. Yeah, it's pretty good.
I think now the conversation is Brimaz or the new card that we just mentioned it makes tokens from
Monastery Mentor.
Like, which one's probably better and depends what the deck's trying to do and how many sorceries and instants you have, blah, 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 blah. And then Seance, which I think is like a kind of, it's an interesting card. It's a junk rare from...
Where you remove all the creatures and you bring them all back?
From Dark Ascension, I think, where, yeah, you remove, there are cards in your graveyard and you can blink one. You kind of blink it into play for a turn. So, like, you put a, I think you reanimate it.
Yeah.
And it can't attack. It doesn't have haste. It just comes into play for a turn, and then you exile it at the end of turn.
Okay, that sounds familiar.
So, like, theoretically, the idea is that you, like, gain... It's kind of like Reverse Birthing Pod, where you gain advantage off of creatures that have died already from their death triggers. It'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm down for a Seance deck. We've talked about more ridiculous cards than that before. So, Ben, as Ben was mentioning, we last week said that...
We hit our number.
Yeah, we hit our number.
We got our 10.
Yeah.
Our 10th.
No, we're 20. We were going for 20.
Oh, we didn't hit it then.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Never mind.
Are you sure?
We got 20 stars, but you have to comment. Stars don't count.
I thought that we were going for 10.
No, it's 20, because I said 17 is a weird number.
Okay, well, you should listen
to that. We were at 12 when we asked everyone.
Because Bachwiz, is that?
That's
Austin Bach.
That's Austin Bach. Yep, nope. Didn't work out. So still, that's still up the grabs. The 20th person, I think there are how many right now?
20.
Oh, there are 20.
20 total.
20 total reviews that we have now.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm thinking. We have to go back and listen to what we said last
week. No, I know exactly what we said. I'm saying how much do we have, how many reviews are there right now?
Since May 4th, we have 10 since May 4th.
How many total do we have? What is the total number?
20.
20. Okay. So the 20th person, it is Austin. So Austin gets the packs.
Yeah!
That was the rule. Oh, you sneak. You guys failed. You have to do better next time. All right.
To make it better, we'll
give it to the next person. We'll also get a random pack because we know the person who got it. Son of a bitch.
I'm gonna send Austin a mean text right now.
Yeah. So thanks, guys. We will send you the pack. The 21st person, you heard it here now. And then I think actually what I want to do is I'm going to send a pack to every 10th reviewer.
I like that.
Yeah, so every time someone hits that 10 mark, so the 30th, the 40th, they will get a pack
and
in the mail.
And you can be guaranteed, by the way, they will not be like a core set current pack or any pack that you can just be buying at your retail store. It'll be something cooler.
It will be a non-standard pack. Yeah. How about that?
It'll be a weirder, older, cooler pack.
All right.
Modern Masters pack? You guys are so nice. Maybe. Wow, that's so cool.
I think we'll probably buy like 10, so like between now and the 100th, and it'll be grab bag.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, awesome. that way we don't have to pick favorites. We love all of you guys, you fan people.
Equally.
So bringing that up, as we mentioned before, please rate us on iTunes. That's how you get packs. That's this whole exercise is about getting more ratings on iTunes.
I'm going to go do that right now.
Jimmy's going to... I'm disappointed that you haven't already. I read it in your podcast. And I didn't
really
win anything.
Oh, no. I've been a guest on your podcast multiple times.
He's literally doing it right now so he can get a Modern Master
pack. I know, right? I heard you guys are giving away those sweet MM packs, man.
Also, follow us on Twitter. We love when we interact with you guys. We will respond when we have witty things to respond with, and sometimes we'll respond with non-witty things. We are at the MMCast. I am at Kes Wiley.
I am at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope.
And
Jimmy loves Periscope. Get on the train, right, Jimmy? No.
I am at JF Wong.
Right, and you have, and we mentioned it before because it was kind of thematically this whole thing. You're on the Command Zone. You're one of the hosts of the Command Zone.
Correctamundo. Command Zone. We are a commander centric podcast. Myself and Josh Lee Kwai. We sort of tackle all aspects. We do top 10 lists. We also do tons of giveaways. We do dragon themed weeks. We do all sorts of stuff. We talk about the politics at the table. We talk about tricks and tips, and we try and cover everything commander wise. And we go from casual to spiky. So we try and get a little bit of everything going.
Cool. All right. And I think that's the question for the week. Please answer. And this is how we know you listen to the very end. What card spoiled so far from Modern Masters are you most excited about? I am personally most excited about Full Mana Mages. It's kept me out of playing a few decks that I want to play, and now I'll be able to play them.
Full Mana Mages is super sweet. I'm actually just excited that I'm going to have a chance to get more Cryptic Commands, because I still don't have my Cryptic Commands.
Oh, yeah.
This guy just used yours.
Right. Yeah. Well, my issue right now is, I have four, but one of them is the foil one I keep in my Geist EDH deck, so it'd be nice to not have to, gut that deck every time I need a card.
Big time.
I'd love to finally get a couple more Karns for my EDH deck.
Oh,
as
yeah.
As well as Tezzeret, who is one of the most baller planeswalkers of all time.
Yeah, he's sweet. I'm a big Tezzeret fan.
Love Tezzeret.
Yeah,
he's
super cool. All right. Dude.
So remember to tweet at us at the MMCast. Thank you. I've been your host, Alex Kessler.
Ben Bateman.
And Jimmy Wong.
That's me.
Thanks for stopping by,
right. I guess. Thanks, guys.
Yep, see you soon.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to the MMCast@rocketjump.com. See you later, alligator.